It's Tuesday. It's Tuesdays with Tom. Tom Skilling, brought to you by Permaseal Basement Systems. Man, we had some storms come through last night, Tom.
We did. Bro, you know, that was the biggest rain we had in 5 weeks, so we actually kind of needed it. But it'd be nice to have it come without trees going down and semis being blown off highways. I guess there were four semis blown off I-55 down near Shanahan in the storms yesterday. But, I'll tell you, they lead to some fascinating skyscapes. You will say that for them.
For sure.
And, you know, we're not alone. Somebody sent me a picture off Virginia Beach of an incredible shelf cloud there. There was somebody who sent me a video from Amarillo, the lightning flashing there. So summer is an interesting season as long as these things don't go severe on you.
Okay, so yesterday, in the middle of all this, I had Demetrius on. You were busy on the television. I had Demetrius trying to get us all informed in what was happening.
Right.
And I have a theory about this, and I ran it past Demetrius, and he's like, I agree with you, but I can't agree with you until you ask Tom. So here I am asking you about this. It seems to me that there are two very populated routes that these storms coming up from the southwest take. And there's one that takes it sort of up I-55, and then it keeps it south of the city of Chicago. That's that old traditional, hate the term, but it's true, Tornado Alley of Chicago.
Yeah.
And then there's a second northern route that does that sort of between Iowa City toward Rockford, and then toward Rockford and past Rockford, south of Milwaukee. And I wonder why that doesn't vary so much. You see that in winter storms and summer storms.
Well, you know, there's truth to that, first of all. If you look at historic tornado paths through this area, the long path length tornadoes run through that corridor you talked about, I-55 and into northwest Indiana. And I'll tell you what I think is going on there. Lake Michigan sends these lake breezes in. You know, the day of the Plainfield tornado back in 1990, we had an east wind blowing here. You could sit in the city and look at this towering, these 64,000-foot top thunderheads that put down the Plainfield tornado on August 28, 1990, that horrible tornado. Wow. And so what you get is a convergence of winds as a result of the lake breezes that set up with large-scale weather systems in such a way that this seems to enhance certainly the long pathway tornadoes through the southern area. And, you know, in the 1980s, there tended to be a corridor that ran from Oswego up through Aurora and then up to Evanston. And that would be part of that band you were talking about in southern Wisconsin. When I worked in Milwaukee, we had two major bands in Wisconsin, one through the southern part of the state, the northern extension of the one you mentioned that hits Rockford and McHenry County and areas like that, and then north into Walworth and Rock and Kenosha counties. And then there was another one up north, up by Phillips and Land O'Lakes and Rhinelander and areas up in the North Woods. So there are specific alleys, and while we can't always identify the reason for them laying out, I think the lake plays a big role in that, because when air collides at the surface, it's got to go somewhere. It can't go into the ground, so it rises, and it tends to enhance these towering thunderstorms that develop. And it verifies what you're saying, these kind of alleys that set up where they do.
Sure seems like it, because you get those communities who've been scarred from it completely have stories, generational stories, about major storms that have gone through. And we're about halfway through the tornado season here, because it starts officially March 1st, right? And it goes all the way through the fall.
Right.
But we've gotten through a fairly, and I hate to even say it now, but it's been moderate so far.
Oh, you know what? It's amazing in the plains how few tornadoes there were, say, in May. Wichita, Kansas, you know, right in the heart of Tornado Alley, had no tornadoes within the metro area there in May. And they've been marveling in Oklahoma and areas out in the plains how few big tornadoes they've had there. The big ones have been down in the Gulf Coast states. And, you know, that was something that Ted Fujita, the University of Chicago tornado researcher, really spent some time on. He said, you know, most people don't appreciate the number of tornadoes that occur, like in Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, the Carolinas. And it turns out when you start looking at the stats, that's a big area down there, but it's been the active area this year in the plain states, which are typically active. You get a dry line there between the dry air that comes off the mountains and the moist air up from the Gulf. And it's that dry line from Texas through Oklahoma, Kansas, Nebraska, up into the Dakotas, that often is the breeding ground of many tornadoes out that way. And it's been relatively quiet this year. So it's been an interesting year. I think the cool weather that we had during the first part of the tornado season, which was related to that buckled jet into the country, probably set that up. It probably retarded or, cut tornado development as a result of that.
Now, that does not necessarily mean it's going to stay like that, though, or does that indicate kind of a trend?
You know something? I used to ask Joe Schaefer, who for years was the director of the Storm Prediction Center, Joe, what's your prediction at this point for the rest of the season? He said, Tom, he said, we generally wind up with around 1,200 tornadoes in the United States, and we get there one way or another. So if the season has started quiet, it seems like things activate later on, and you still wind up at that magic 1,200 number or something close to it. Mm-hmm. So that's something to keep in mind from a veteran, head of the Storm Prediction Center that puts out all the country's tornado watches. I thought that made a lot of sense.
Does. Hold on one second.
Like that happens.
Hold on one second. We'll come right back because I want to ask you, the theory of Chicago has always been that it's the big buildings that keep the tornadoes from coming in. I want to ask you about that. So because I kind of said, wait a second. I would like to debate you on that and lose, as a gentleman, but we'll talk about that on the other side. Plus we want to find out what's going to come up for the rest of the week and into the weekend. Tom Skilling is with us, but right now here's Lauren Lapka.
There's Chicago in the Real Watch. Dan Ponce, Lauren Jiggets, Larry Potash, and Robin Baumgarten. Get real in the morning with the WGN TV Morning News Team weekdays 4 to 10.
Tuesdays with Tom, back with Tom Skilling. All right, I wanted to have this debate with you forever because it would be like me fighting Muhammad Ali. At least I was in the ring. That's the way I look at it. So There is a theory. We're talking about tornadoes. If you're just joining us, we're talking about tornadoes, and it's been a relatively mild tornado season up here. And we had terrible storms last night, the kind of which in previous years you'd be very concerned about tornado formation out of them. But there is a theory that downtown Chicago, because of the big buildings and the inability of the air to get through, and it has to go through lanes to get out into the storm system, that keeps tornadoes from forming. I happen to subscribe to that because it makes me feel better since I live downtown.
Well, it isn't true. And I'll tell you how we know that. You know, with Doppler radar scans, now you can see the circulation in these thunderheads. You know, when you get a big tornado, often that circulation reaches up to 40 or 50,000 feet. So we're talking about, downtown skyscrapers, Willis Tower, the Hancock Building, Trump Tower, that go up, 1,000 feet, a little over that. Mm-hmm. And that's minuscule. What really is at work downtown is the heat produced. Fujita used to have that tornado machine in his lab down at the University of Chicago. And he put these wires through it, which he could plug in, and they heated up red-hot coils. Mm-hmm. And he would produce a little, mini tornado in his machine. And then he'd plug in this grid of, wires that would heat up red hot. And the minute they heated up, the circulation of this tornado would fall apart. And he always said that the heat released by the downtown area, he thought, would take relatively small tornadoes and reduce them by one F-scale intensity. Because he said the vertical motion, the rising air off the buildings, due to air conditioning and the re-radiation they heat by concrete and roads and buildings, would disrupt the circulations of these tornadoes. So that was his take. Hmm. And I'll tell you something else. We always say Lake Michigan doesn't impact tornadoes, and really, a strong tornado will get right out over the lake if it wants to. But the fact of the matter is, when we bring cool breezes in off the lake, nothing deters thunderstorm or tornado development like cooling the air down near the surface. And that's what the lake breeze can do on certain days. The air is less buoyant, and therefore that has an effect on thunderstorms and tornadoes. And it may also impact the tracks you were talking about. The fact that we have access to cooling lake breezes here, and they don't, say, if you go south of the city, in that active belt down there in northwest Indiana and all, once you get away from the lake. So there's a lot of evidence, Ro, that the building height and the buildings themselves are not what's doing it. There are other factors that are involved.
Oh, I love my theory, though. I liked it. But, the urban heat island I like, too, because that explains a lot of the theory here as to why tornadoes have pretty much historically, since the 20th century, have avoided major urban centers. Either we've been incredibly lucky or there is something to the amount of concrete or whatever it is. I guess, was it Nashville within the last decade?
Yeah, they had one there.
Yeah.
One in Miami.
Yeah.
Salt Lake City had a tornado several years back in Dallas. Yeah, famous. Well, here's the deal, Ro. You know, tornadoes, by their nature, are relatively compact storms. They're relatively small. I saw a stat once that the probability of a tornado occurring on any spot in Illinois would give its periodicity of occurrence once every 1,500 years on average, something like that. Now, some areas have had multiple tornadoes and buck that statistical trend. But the fact is, these are relatively small storms, and cities, large as they may be, are still geographically relatively small entities when you look at the expanse of the country.
Yeah.
So the climatological probability a tornado is going to occur in a relatively small area with any great frequency is not all that great. So part of it is just the fact that our cities are rather small and therefore have a lower chance of having one of these relatively compact storms go through them. But having said that, we've had tornadoes. I mean, the Oak Lawn tornado back in April of 67 went from Oak Lawn across the Dan Ryan, and it went out over the lake a mile east of the Science and Industry Museum. And that was during rush hour. Knocked semis off overpasses. We had one about a half decade ago up here on the shoreline up by Loyola University that formed right over the lake shore and went out over the lake and then dissipated. So they do occur here. There's no question about it. The last one to hit what is now the Loop was 1876. So you have to go back quite a ways to get one in that area.
So you're saying that we got now 1,500 more years from that, so or 1,400 more years.
No, that's the dangerous stat.
All right.
It just is, I guess, an illustrative stat that shows you how infrequently these occur. But look at Plainfield. I mean, you know,
there was
a tornado back in the mid-'80s, and then you had the 1990 horrendous tornado. And those areas have been pretty active, the southwest suburbs. And that's continued into recent years.
Yeah, it absolutely has. And they're weary of it in some respects because especially when you get further southwest, almost into that exurban area, Joliet and parts west and south of Joliet. I mean, but they see those things developing.
I've always been convinced, Ro, that part of the reason why I think urban dwellers don't take the tornado threat perhaps as seriously, and I'm generalizing here, I shouldn't do that, but I do think there's a cognizance of tornadoes and severe weather that's driven by what you say, what you point out right there. The fact you can see them, you know, the horizontal visibility when you don't have buildings in the way at all is magnificent, and you see these incredible, meteorological features, be they tornadoes or thunderheads or rainbows and stuff like that, so much more clearly in many cases out away from the buildings and all.
Yeah.
So I think there's truth to that.
Yeah. All right, let's look ahead to the weekend here. As the rest of the week and the weekend, what's it going to look like?
Well, there's a warming pattern coming, and I think, you know, we had the eighth driest June going up to the rain's arrival yesterday since 1960. We've reversed that, and there are signs that thunderstorms, which will pop in isolated fashion because there's a little instability in the air, it's cool air aloft, the next few afternoons, those will become more numerous on Friday and Saturday. So we could get some downpours with that, but in the process, be in a warming situation. So it looks like it's going to get pretty warm and humid, and we ought to be flirting with 90 degrees as we get into the weekend and go into next week if current trends continue. And then figures, you know, we're in the final days of June. July begins next week. So yeah.
A lot of people are off next week. I mean, people have been off anyway, yeah. Right? But people are going to be off taking the next 2 weeks. That's the sort of the heart of the midsummer vacation cycle. So you know, Tom, we've talked about it. I'm 110% behind you and everything you've done with this summer. I think you've done an amazing job. And a couple 90s, you throw them my way. I'm totally okay with it. Even with the humidity. Last week, you called this exactly right, that we had that dry spell of 90s, which was just amazingly pleasant.
Beautiful.
And then when it got humid, like on Friday and Saturday, I'm like, that's all right. You know what? I had 2 days of beautiful 90s, and now I'm going to do 2 days of this. I'll take the split. You are my hero, Tom Skilling, for what you have done for this season so far.
I've worked my fingers to the bone producing this. You know the impact I have in producing this.
Of course.
Stuff, Rose,
yes, absolutely. Without question, Tom.
In other words, thanks, bro, but no thanks, because Mother Nature is going to do what Mother Nature does, but it has been beautiful. You are so right.
Yeah, it's been great.
Really pretty nice.
It's been great. You're the only part of the newscast, you and sports, I guess, are the only part of the newscast, Tom Skilling, where people can go feel good about the news, right? Where they stop and go, oh, that was good news. And you can get away with telling good news, because in the news department, if you just told good news all day long, people go, oh, I'm not so interested in this. But
I know. And
in weather, they love it.
We're also... We're the folks who bring you the stories of the, tornadoes coming and flooding and stuff like that. So we have our moments. But I know what you're saying. We kind of deal with a subject that's of interest to people, but most of the time it's not life-threatening. There are times when it is.
But it's one thing that affects us all, and especially in this moment. I hate to get all philosophical here, but in this moment of American history and the history of Chicago specifically, there are a lot of things that are going wrong that people go, well, that's not affecting me. The one thing about the weather is it affects everybody.
You're right. It's no mistake stations spend time with it. I remember, Ro, during a Super Bowl Sunday, we had, sub-zero cold here. It was barbaric. And so everybody was locked inside, but they were going to be inside watching the Super Bowl anyway. And I remember looking at the overnight ratings. We went from like a 0.5% share of the audience going into that up to a 10%. And that was tune-in. People were coming in to see about this barbaric cold. And we see the same thing in heat waves and storms and all, so there is interest, and no wonder, as you say, it affects everybody. So I guess we shouldn't be surprised by that.
No question about it. Tuesdays with Tom Skilling. Can see him on the WGN TV weather starting at 5 o'clock tonight, 5, 6, 9, and 10. News from Northwestern Medicine Newsroom next.